guys, and joining us right now is Texas Rangers Hall of Famer and new special assistant to the general manager, Ian Kinsler's joining us. Hey, Ian, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, what's in that room? What's in that background behind you? Looks.
Oh, we got all kinds of stuff back here. We got some Michael Young's shoes.
Oh, okay.
So you know him?
Is that Eric Hosmer bat right here?
All right.
Oh, this is a good one. We got Al Kaline.
Oh, very good. Wow. Very good. That's good.
And so on. Miggy and Francisco Lindor,
Is that your office?
No, this is like a game room kind of pool table and stuff.
All right.
You think about it, you play for the Rangers, all the great players there.
Yeah.
Tigers, great players. I think a lot of people forget the Angels and the Red Sox, so they shouldn't.
You won a World Series.
The Padres. So I can only imagine the stuff you could possibly have. But Al Kaline, that's sweet.
That's
the one.
So, you got a new job.
Yes.
how did it all come about?
Just in my mind, I think being a Texas Ranger was probably the only other place to be besides San Diego. I liked working with AJ. I liked working with the team there. Obviously had a good thing going, but Texas was home for me. It's always been that way. And, this is where I'm most comfortable. This is what I know best. And this is what I'm connected to the most. So, the Rangers was always in, the front of my mind, but, when CY got hired and be able to talk to him a little bit about, the possibility, and then discussing with AJ about the possibility and getting his take on it, it all kind of came together, over time and a lot of discussions and I'm grateful that it happened.
Was a trade struck? Does Chris Young have to buy AJ dinner or anything like that?
I don't know what went down there with their conversations, but I probably have to buy AJ some dinner when I get to Arizona. I know that.
But we'll get back to your new job in a second. You also have a more pressing job, and that's managing Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic. What do you like about that opportunity? I know you this isn't your first go around with them, and you played for them in the Olympics. What has that whole thing been like for you?
It's been a crazy experience. I think when I retired in 2019, there it wasn't on my map to play for Team Israel. I wasn't thinking about really playing at all, and Team Israel qualified for the Olympics. They won the European Championship. So I got a call from the general manager, Peter Kurtz, asking me if I wanted to play in the Olympics. All I knew was the WBC, international baseball at that time. Yeah. You rarely think of baseball in the Olympics. It happens every once in a while, but when you get that opportunity right away, I jumped at it. And later learning that I had to go to Israel and get my citizenship, become an Israeli citizen to play. Oh, wow. So that took me on like a whole nother path. And, I went to Israel with my wife and experienced Jerusalem, experienced Tel Aviv and all the history and all the information, and just getting more connected to my heritage, my dad's side of the family. It's been a lot of fun and it's been eye opening and it's just been a great experience. And then, after the Olympics, developing those relationships, they asked me if I wanted to manage the WBC. And, it seemed like a great opportunity at the time and a good way to get my feet wet and see what managing is all about and kind of go from there.
Yeah. It seemed like, you guys got a tough draw in the WBC. Just
you think?
Miami. Huh?
He goes, you think?
Yeah. A little tough. But how far has Israeli baseball come to get to this point?
It's come a long way. I think 2000. What was the WBC before the 2017 one?
It would have been three. So it would have been 14 or 13. 13. Yeah. 13, I think.
So 13, they tried to qualify for the WBC and failed. And then they qualified. I don't know how they qualified for 2017. I think they had to play through a qualifying tournament to qualify for the WBC, similar to like the Czech did this year. And they played it extremely well. And I think that kind of brought to light Israel baseball. They played hard. They had fun. They played with energy. They started in Korea, won or finished second in that pool, I believe, and then moved on to Japan and lost to the Netherlands, to move to LA. So they finished sixth in the tournament in 2017, which qualified them automatically for this coming WBC. And since then, there's been a baseball field built in Bet Shemesh in Israel, with lights and turf and batting cages and, you know, a little baby locker room and all kinds of cool stuff for the kids and the development of baseball players in Israel. And that's really been the whole connection for me. It's like bringing the sport to another country, and developing it there, I think is super rewarding. So, you know, it's come a long way. I think there's still a long way to go, but, there are some young players that are pretty good that are coming up, and it should be interesting to watch.
Well, now, you know, they have an in with a major league franchise. You know, you get some of these guys signed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You can scout them too.
That's right. Yeah. So, barring you guys advancing, which, you know, can't rule it out. You think you'll be to Rangers camp probably for the first time in late toward the end there in March?
Say that again. Be Rangers what?
You'll be at Rangers camp for the first time in late March, probably.
Rangers camp. Yes. Yeah. I'll probably, when the WBC ends, I'll probably take a couple days at home and then, head out to spring training for a week or a little over a week and just get acclimated with everything. And the way that Boach is running things and the way that CY is running things and, you know, the minor leagues, the coordinator, and just try to, you know, get my feet wet and get connected and you know, find out what's going on, really.
I mean, do you have any pet projects in mind, any players you want to work with? Or 'cause I think you went out to Frisco last year, not in a official capacity. I think it was one of their throwback Thursdays or Thirsty Thursdays or whatever, but, you know, how familiar are you with the farm system and what's potentially at Frisco?
I'm not familiar at all yet. I got the list of minor league prospects yesterday, kind of looking over those, and spring training will tell a lot. I think it's pretty easy to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they'll be organizational favorites whose name will get thrown around pretty frequently. And you kind of are able to, you know, watch from there and see what is in the minor league system. I think right now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they're ranked seventh in baseball in the minor league system. So
yeah,
they have some really good players, some really interesting players. I know on the mound, they're pretty good. So, you know, it's going to be fun to get to know these guys and hopefully help them along their way.
So what have you learned about this side of the business that as a player, you're like, man, I hate that. And now you're like, well, this might be I can kind of see why they do this. You know, the front office versus the player scenario. How do you view it now?
Yeah. I mean, it's just way different than being a player. As a player, your mentality is to win every game. I mean, the bottom line is you're going to do whatever it takes to win that day. And when you are in the front office, you just have your view is not so narrow. You try to understand the future a little bit. You try to predict the future a little bit. You try to give, you know, players extra chances. And as a player, you're not okay with that. You know, you're not ready to develop players. You're ready to win every day.
Yeah.
If a guy's not, you know, not holding up their end of the bargain as a player, you're ready to move on quickly. As a front office, you just see a broader picture.
Well, I guess the big deal last summer was the Juan Soto trade, and I, you know, the Padres gave up a lot.
Yeah, that was a big trade.
What were your emotions? Was it hard to do the trade, or were you like, holy cow, this is Juan Soto, this is once in a lifetime?
Well, for me, the guys that they traded for Juan Soto were part of my responsibility list.
Sure.
So yeah. I was paying attention to a lot of those prospects, basically all of them except for one, Jackson Merrill, who's still in the system, all got traded. So for me, you know, the second half of the summer was pretty empty. I mean, Jackson, I think, hit 320 in A ball, so there wasn't a lot to do. You just kind of let him play. There's not a lot of development going on there, and we've had our conversations, but all the guys got traded. And I think any time you get a chance to get or to acquire a bona fide all-star, a superstar, really, like DeGrom, you take the chance and you go for it, because it just doesn't happen very often. Those types of players don't come available very often. And if you can somehow, as a free agent, persuade a guy to come to your organization, and, or as a trade, have enough pieces to acquire that guy, in my opinion, it's really hard to say no to that. And that's the other, you know, I think that kind of leads a little bit more to the player's perspective. You know, front office might look at the salary and how long they have and how much are we going to end up paying them. Are we going to be able to pay him in free agency, or before he gets to free agency, are we going to be able to extend him? All of these different questions that go into play. But for me, a superstar player, my mind automatically just turns to more of a player perspective. Like, this, you got to acquire this guy. If you have a chance to acquire him, I think you take a shot every time.
Well, and that, you know, right now at my website, Rangers Today, TR is writing a kind of chronicling the John Daniels era, and he just, you know, part three, Cliff Lee trade, and what a difference that was, and how that really changed the trajectory, not just of your 2010 season, but it kind of like, it made you guys legit, you know. So I remember it very well. What do you remember? Because I wasn't in the clubhouse when Wash broke the news, but as the news was breaking, as we were hearing it, I remember being in the clubhouse. What was that like?
Well, at the time, I don't think, like, there was, you know, Twitter wasn't a popular thing. Instagram wasn't, you know, a crazy thing. I don't think MLB trade rumors was as in depth as they are now. So there was like an envelope of paper that gets put on the desk every day, and it gives you all the news from the day before. So every day we would go in like, what's going on with the Rangers?
Yeah.
Who are we looking at? What are possibilities? And obviously Cliff Lee was a possibility. You know, amongst the players at that time, we were in first place. We were feeling good. We had a good, you know, we were making a good run at it. To acquire a guy like Cliff was just super exciting. It's just like a shot in the arm, really. I mean, it's the middle of the summer. You're playing good baseball, and to acquire somebody that can potentially put you over the top is just huge. So it just kind of changes the whole energy of everything, and you get super excited. That was a good moment in Rangers history for sure.
Yeah, he was okay in the regular season. I mean, he wasn't like lights out, but
playoffs, he was
game five when, you know, he pitched so well, and you hit that big homer in the ninth to kind of seal the deal, and then the game he pitched in the division series was just lights out. He didn't re-sign, and that's fine. But,
well, Wash is the one that broke it to you, right?
I believe so, but I believe everyone kind of knew.
Okay. I was wondering if he came in and dropped an F-bomb.
I'm sure he did.
We mother-effing got him.
He definitely did that.
You still, how often are you still talking to Wash, or do you run into him or whatever?
I don't talk to Wash much since I've stopped playing. Honestly, I think, you know, when I was playing, I would see him every once in a while as an opponent, so we'd be able to catch up and stuff. But he's so locked in on what he's doing and getting the guys in Atlanta better, and, you know, getting on the field and working and doing all the stuff that Wash does. So we haven't talked much since I retired, honestly.
A conversation with him is like the highlight of anybody's day. Like if we're talking, he really helps out with Do It For Durrett. It just brightens my day. And then he just talks, you know, what's going on. And in the Wash way, it's unbelievable. And I hang up and I'm like, my day has been made.
Yeah.
It really has been. Yeah. So, look, the way we do it here is I kind of ask some baseball questions, and then John will ask some more, you know, get to know Ian Kinsler stuff. Not that people don't know you. And then I'll interject and interfere, but I'll start. Sorry, John. With the war stick hat that you got on.
Yeah.
How is the baseball bat business?
It's going well. It's going really well.
Henry's got one, right?
Henry has one. Yeah. My son has one.
You know, it started out as a wood bat only company. And now we've, you know, moved. We have softball bats and pickleball rackets and, you know, four different alloy bats to choose from for kids, and lacrosse sticks and surfboards and all, you know, apparel, all kinds of stuff. So it's been going really well. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I didn't know the market for aluminum bats or alloy bats or whatever, but I've learned a lot about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing well. We just released our new bat, a new bat that just came out for us. And there's these guys on the internet. They're called the Baseball Bat Bros.
Okay.
And they test all the bats and they rank them, and they pretty much run the whole market. Like, whatever these guys say is gold. All the kids listen to these guys, and they just put our bat third. So our new bat. So that's like exceptional, for us. And we're really excited about it. And, you know, the next stop really for us is, I think softball is trying to get into the softball market and giving the girls something that's really cool and something that they enjoy swinging, something that, you know, obviously works well. But it's been fun to be a part of.
What's the name of the new bat? Cause I know all your bats have names.
Yeah. It's called a Bone Saber.
Okay.
Bone Saber. That's
cool. I knew the Bone Saber. Henry didn't get the Bone Saber.
Okay.
Yeah. What did he get? It's a Bone Saber hybrid is the new one. They have like two-piece bats now. Two-piece I don't know bats, if you've seen these things.
Oh yeah.
Like, so the new one's a two-piece.
All right. So listen, you grew up in Tucson, Arizona. You went to Canyon del Oro High School. Is where you went to high school. Now I think I've heard this. You played other sports, right? Besides baseball.
Yes.
What else did you play?
I played soccer. Soccer was my other big sport.
Okay. Now, did you have any offers to do anything with soccer? Or?
I had one from like the University of Portland.
What did you play?
That's their mascot. The University of Portland's the Pilots.
What did you play in soccer? Were you a striker? Were you up front or were you in the middle?
Well, I was a midfielder. I was a center midfielder until my junior year. And then after my sophomore year of high school, I stopped playing like club soccer.
Yeah.
So I lost my skills of playing in the middle and didn't feel comfortable playing in the middle. So then the coach moved me to striker, the forward.
Yeah.
My junior and senior year, I just played forward. So I didn't have as many responsibilities.
Now, you ended up going to Central Arizona College, which I think you had some other deals, but you ended up going there first. Where else were you recruited? Were there anybody that you almost went through right out of high school?
No, I was not recruited at all. It was either Central Arizona or Pima Community College, which is the Tucson Community College there. Those were really my only two choices. And it was a pretty easy choice for me. Central, you know, has a great baseball history. They had a great coach at the time. His name was Clint Myers. And, you know, it was just the baseball spot in Arizona, really. If you wanted to get better, you go to Central Arizona.
Okay, so I don't know if a lot of people knew this or not, but Ian, you were drafted three times So this is a fun question for me to ask, because it's when you're drafted in the rounds you were drafted in, it's really not like New York where you're sitting there waiting to come up and do that. So in 2000, out of high school, you were taken by Arizona in the 29th round. 2001, Arizona took you again in the 26th round. And then 2 years later, Texas ended up, everyone knows that, best 17th round pick ever. Texas took you. Where were you at on all three of those? Do you remember where you were and how you found out you got drafted?
Yeah. So the first one, I was in my living room, listening to the MLB radio dial up AOL style, with my best friend in high school. His name's Brian Anderson, who ended up going in the first round, out of University of Arizona.
Right.
But we thought he was going to get drafted. And so we were all huddled around a computer listening to the names getting thrown out. And the first day his name didn't come. So he came back over the second day and did the whole thing again. And then we just kind of had it on, just kind of listening in the background, because it had gone past the point that he thought he was going to get drafted. And they called my name in the 29th round. It was pretty bizarre. I mean, I did a couple workouts at the high school with some scouts and had a couple guys at the house, but nothing crazy. And then, the Diamondbacks picked me with 29 picks. So that was pretty bizarre. The Relax. Second time I got Relax. Drafted, I don't really remember. I don't really remember because, when I got drafted out of high school, there was a thing called the draft and follow.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Where there's no negotiation. They basically just draft you and keep your rights through the year. And now they have negotiating rights with you before the next draft.
Right.
And that's what they did after my freshman year at Central Arizona, is they negotiated with me before that draft and we didn't come to an agreement. So I really wasn't paying attention to the draft. So I'm like, they're not going to, all of a sudden take me in the fifth round and then offer me way more money than they just negotiated with me. So I really didn't pay attention to that one. And then my junior year, I was at the University of Missouri and I was the guy sitting on the couch thinking I was going to get picked high. And I had a teammate named Jeremy Hernandez who lived in California, and he was driving from Columbia back home to California. And he said he would give me a ride to Tucson. And I talked him into staying an extra day to listen to the first day of the draft, because I swear I was going to get drafted. And so we stayed an extra day and I didn't get picked. And then the next day I wanted him to stay again and listen. And he's like, dude, you're either staying here and find another ride or you're coming with me. And so I had to get in the car. And so, cell service at that time wasn't great. And right. I just had this little flip phone.
Yeah.
So we were in the mountains in northern Arizona driving down into the valley. And, that's when I got the text message on my phone and the call from the Rangers saying that they drafted me in the 17th round.
Who's first guy you talked to with the Rangers?
It was Mike Gross. I believe Mike Gross was, the first one to call me. And then I think, Grady Fuson called me.
Yeah. What did you sign for?
30,000 large.
30K large.
30,000 large. That's not bad. I mean, hey, it's the best 17th round draft pick I've ever seen. I mean, that's amazing what you've done after that. Now, after this, we go into the one time. Well, have you been traded more than once?
Or a couple times?
I have been traded twice.
Twice. The first one, though, was from the Rangers. That was when you found out when you were out of town. Is that how you found out?
You were on vacation.
Yeah. Okay. So you were on vacation on that. We're not going to get into that. We're having fun now. Okay.
That could be fun.
Yeah, that could be fun. But hey, he's back here, man. He's home. All right. So this is fun for me, Ian, because truthfully, I was a Ranger fan before I ever became getting into the media. So like during the World Series and stuff, I was up in the stands. I went to all the World Series games sitting up top. I was there when you got your April 3rd, right? Was that your major league debut? First hit was off Schilling, right?
Yeah, Curt Schilling.
Yeah, to right field, right down.
Should be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, right. That's right. So let me ask you this. So you made the team out of spring training. I think all of us knew you were going to do that. We were following you. You had done well at AAA the year before. coming up. How did you find out? Who told you you were going to be a big leaguer, and how'd you find out?
This is a good story. I think I know this one.
Oh, Jeff, you know this story?
I think. Not well enough to tell it verbatim, but I think you talked about it.
Yeah, over the summer. It was pretty crazy. So they had Mark DeRosa in camp to play second base. Cause at the time, you know, I didn't have any big league experience. I was still trying to make the team, cut my teeth. And so they had veteran guys in camp, to kind of push me. And if I didn't perform well, I guess, I don't know. I was kind of Buck's thing. He always had, you know, these competitions going on in spring training. I played well. I felt good. You know, the year before I was the last cut, I went to the exhibition game with the team in San Francisco and they cut me. Obviously Soriano was there. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I performed really well. I felt like I was ready. I felt like there's an opening at second base. And so we had a spring training game in Tucson, actually my hometown. So I went down to play in that and I started the game because, you know, the veteran guys usually didn't make that trip at the time. So I started the game at second. I played really, I think I got two hits, hit a double. And then got taken out of the game, I think, in the sixth inning, and kind of sat around and watched and hung out. And then after the game, I was just going about my business, you know, getting undressed, getting in the shower, going to see my family to get something to eat. And Don Wakamatsu went looking for me. And he poked his head around the corner of the shower and he's like, Kinsler, Buck wants to see you when you got a chance. And immediately my mind was like, oh, he's going to tell me if I made the team or not. So like, I didn't shower off. Like I just ran out of the shower, grabbed a towel, put it around my waist. I saw like soap dripping down my face and like ran into the office and I was like, you wanted to see me? And you know, he told me, he sat me down. He's like, what the hell are you doing? Basically.
Yeah.
Sat me down, looked at me all funny. You know, Buck always had like these weird looks.
Right.
He just kind of stared at me and I'm sitting there in a towel like, dude, what's going on? Yeah. And he said, you got a bunch of family here? And I said, yeah, this is my, you know, this is where I grew up. And he goes, well, you go have fun tonight because you're the opening day second baseman.
Holy cow.
And I ran out of there as fast as I could. I didn't finish my shower. I just toweled off with my clothes on and went out with my family. So it was a pretty cool moment.
That's awesome.
That's every one of us that ever played baseball. Our dream was one day to make a major league debut. So I love those stories. I really like it when people get called up in the middle of the year. But I think as a fan, I remember this, Ian. We were expecting you to make the opening day roster as second baseman. We, as fans, that's what we thought was going to happen. You as media probably thought that too. It's kind of like Josh Young this year coming in. You're kind of expecting him to make the team.
Yeah.
So, okay. What you're about to say something.
Oh yeah. No, the thing that I think, and you've had mentioned this also over the summer, I think it's important for people to hear. You felt you always had like a chip on your shoulder. You felt slighted by where you were drafted and, you know, things like that. And it just seems like that's what always motivated you, even after you became an all-star. Am I right?
I think my dad kind of instilled that style of play in me, first of all, you know, when I was a young kid. And then in high school, I played with four other Major League Baseball players were on my high school team.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time I was 6 foot, you know, 165, and I was being overlooked. And I, that kind of started to develop my, you know, my chip or whatever you want to call it. And so that's where it all started. And I always thought that I was better than those guys. I always thought that I could compete with those guys. But I never got the recognition. And then I, you know, like we just talked about, I was never recruited out of high school, and all these other guys went to University of Arizona was right in our backyard. We were, you know, year in, year out powerhouse in baseball.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I was playing shortstop and hit over 500 my senior year and didn't get one call from the University of Arizona. didn't get a call from Arizona State out of high school. And besides that, I didn't get a call from anybody, but
yeah.
All the other guys, like Chris Duncan was a first-round pick. Scott Harrison was a first-round pick. Brian Anderson went to University of Arizona, became a first-round pick. Shelly Duncan was went to University of Arizona and became a first or second round pick.
Right.
So that's kind of where it all started. And once that's there, and then my college career, the way that it happened, you know, going to junior college first, then transferring to Arizona State and not playing because I played bad poorly. And then having to transfer again to University of Missouri, it was like a constant thing trying to prove myself. And I guess, you know, it showed up in the way that I played on the field.
Listen, I got two more for you. We're going to play the home run game, which is a fun game I play with everybody. And then we're going to ask you the question we ask everybody.
Yeah.
But the home run game is a fun one. You're a guy that's – I hit one home run in my entire life. I know exactly where I was when I hit it, went over the fence. I mean, I'll never forget it. You've hit a few of them. So I always ask about three home runs. The first one, do you remember the first home run you ever hit over a fence? How old were you and where were you?
I don't.
You're like the first one who's never remembered it.
I know. You never remembered your first one. That, he hit so many of them. He hit 270-something in the major league.
I don't remember my first one, but I do remember getting in the car with my dad, driving home, and crying because I couldn't hit one and all my friends were hit. when I was like 11 years old. I know it was, I was 11 years old when I hit my first homer over the fence.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I know that. I don't remember the first one, though.
Okay. Now, the next one's the most exciting one. Sometimes someone might say one or two of them, but whether it was high school, college, in minor leagues, in the pros, or, you know, the one where it was a walk-off or anything like that, what's the most exciting one you remember hitting?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. I think the home run that stands out that, you know, as far as atmosphere goes and just electricity, was the homer off Matt Garza in 2010 at the ballpark in Arlington. I think it was a 1-1 game at the time in the seventh, and I hit a 2-run home run to make it 3-1 in the seventh. And that place was, you know, in 2010, the ballpark was just electric.
Right. Yeah.
So my mind always goes to that home run.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, the game 5 homer against Tampa.
Yeah, I remember that one too.
That place got so quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a fantastic feeling. That was a great home run, but at the time Cliff was dealing. I mean, it was a little bit of insurance and it felt great.
Right. Yeah. But,
you know, Soriano had a great year that year and he was tough to get and I was able to get him. It was just a lot. And like the Rangers hadn't won a, you know, postseason series at that point. So to hit that home run, it was huge, but
put them ahead.
The atmosphere at the ballpark of that Garza home run is what I remember.
All right.
Okay, last one, the bomb. The one that you hit, the moment you hit it, you knew it was gone, and how far do you think it went?
I know the one. I mean, you guys probably have no clue about this one, but it was against Josh Smith. He was pitching for the New York Mets in 2008. And Willie Randolph at the time was getting booed and the Mets were bad and it was just a bad situation in New York. And they took out a lefty and put in Joe Smith to come face me. And the first pitch he threw me, I hit it over the stadium, like out of the stadium, because at the time they were doing construction on Shea Stadium. They were renovating it. And so it went over the bleachers and kind of just disappeared. And that was probably the first ball I've ever hit in my life.
2008 was the last year of Shea, I think, because and that series, the Saturday game got rained out, and they had to play 2-1. They had to play 2-1 Sunday, and I had to change my flight. I remember that, Ian, but I don't. I apologize.
That's what he remembers.
I do not remember the home run.
All his travel woes. He remembers all of that when he's traveling. Okay, last question. This one has some great answers, and you'll love some of the answers to it. It's what's something that nobody knows about you. We've got John Daniels, who he's been on here twice. He had airplane underwear. He wore two pair of underwear. He wore one when he got on a plane, and when he returned home, he had another pair he took with him everywhere. And he said, hey, it's worked. I'm still here.
Yeah.
We had Jack Leiter, who's in our system now, can't stand peanut butter. Michael Young's talked about the clowns, but he actually told us the story of how the whole clown thing started. where, you know, he's not necessarily afraid of clowns. He just doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is something that nobody knows about Ian Kinsler?
I think people know everything about me. I don't know. I pretty much tell everybody what I'm thinking usually. I don't hold too much back. What do people not know about me? I mean, I'm trying to think of something like from high school or something. I mean, my first car, I drove this little Honda Civic hatchback, four-speed.
Yeah.
No radio. And like the air conditioning blew super cold. So that's all I wanted being in, you know, Tucson.
Yeah.
So you know how to drive a manual transmission.
Yeah.
So I learned how to drive a stick was my first car.
I'll tell you right now, anybody under the age of 25 doesn't know how. I've got three kids that are 25 and younger. They don't know how to drive a stick. They couldn't figure it out.
Yeah,
if they were getting murdered and they had to jump in a car and it was a stick, they would be gone.
keep killing it.
They would be.
Well, that's good. A little Honda Civic hatchback.
Yeah, and he drives a stick. Can you drive a stick?
I can.
Yes. I can too. I grew up driving a stick. I'm old, sir.
Yes,
I'm old.
I mean, I'm 6 years younger than you. I mean, I'm like your
whole
generation.
So, pretty much, though, almost. All right. Well, anything else for him?
No, but I'm looking forward to this new chapter, bud. It's going to be good to see you out at the ballpark on occasion.
And, absolutely. Absolutely.
Run into you at Frisco or wherever we might go. So looking forward to it.
We'll try to get another one where we'll get in studio sometime and we'll do some lunch, cater a lunch, do that, and just make it a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That's Ian Kinsler, Texas Ranger Hall of Famer and new special assistant to the general manager. Ian, thanks so much for coming on, bud.
Thanks for having me, guys.